So the lesson learned for me is that you can have really big companies that are moving really fast if that team that you're working with is, they're thinking like a startup and they see themselves as innovators. And on the other side, you can have smaller companies that go really slow because they're not sure about their strategy and they're like going up back and forth.
Welcome to the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast, powered by Gusto. On this show, we explore the intersection of fintech, vertical SaaS, and how software combats the rising complexity of running a business. Our goal is to share stories, advice, and best practices from the leaders and investors behind today's cutting-edge platforms. This episode of the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast is brought to you by Gusto Embedded. Gusto has spent a decade building and testing its payroll, tax filing, and compliance infrastructure, which is available as a robust set of APIs so you can develop custom-tailored payroll solutions. For more information, go to embedded.gusto.com. Here's your host, Brian Bush.
Welcome to this episode of the SMB Tech Innovators Podcast. My name is Brian Bush, your host. Today, we're broadcasting a special episode. Rex Salisbury, the solo general partner at Cambrian Ventures and a former A16Z partner focused on fintech, sat down with Tomer Ludden, Gusto's chief product officer and co-founder, for a fireside chat with a live audience at Gusto's San Francisco headquarters in the fall of 2024. Topics covered include Gusto's founding story and why it took over a decade for embedded payroll's moment to arrive, Tomer's framework for successful products and why there's never been a better time to build tech products for SMBs, compliance inflation and how regulation impacts fintech products, spoiler alert, more than just meets the eye, and much, much more. So without further delay, please enjoy the conversation between Rex and Tomer.
Awesome. Thanks so much, everyone, for coming out. Beautiful sunny day in the dog patch, which as a resident of the Presidio, I always appreciate coming up to this part of the city. We'll give people a couple more minutes to get in their seats here, and then we'll get started. Good day so far for you, Tomer.
Yeah, fun day. Always fun to come to the office, hang out, meet in person, get stuff done. I think we got used to this, to the remote world. And then when you have that in-person time, you get so much out of it, right?
No, totally. Super special to be in person. And I'm excited to be doing more events in person. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Rex Salisbury, founder of Cambrian Ventures. I do fintech investing. This whole interview will be recorded, posted online. If you want to watch it a second time, you could do that, or just tell your friends about it. We have a little intro talking about what we're going to talk about. But the big thing we want to cover today is with Tomer, co-founder of Gusto, about their new embedded product. When I think about Gusto, like, you guys take a product that people historically have hated and not appreciated doing, and you've made it personal. Fun might be too strong of a word, but like very approachable. Just, I also think about the way you guys sign emails. Like everyone has like what Gusto means to them.
Right. Yeah, totally. Like when we started the company, one of the interesting things is often like startup advice is start with a really small market that grows really quickly and try to jump on it and be a part of that growing market. And that's actually the opposite of what we did when the company started. Our situation was when we started the company, payroll, we didn't invent payroll. Payroll was already there. There were these huge companies like ADP, Paychex, Intuit. There's a bunch of other companies, like every single employer needed payroll. So we didn't invent that. So we knew that for us to really make a difference, for us to really punch through, our differentiation was just user experience differentiation. It was innovation around user experience. So these are things that was really deep to the core of where we started. Our tagline was, in the beginning, was modern, delightful payroll. And the word delightful there made people feel like, what the heck? What are you talking about?
No, totally. And you can feel it. If you see it in their just their logo and their messaging and how they communicate over email, it's very true. I want to back up to the founding story, though, 2011. So, well, first of all, I guess a year ago, you announced a very big embedded fintech deal with JPM.
Right.
And it seems like that's new. But if we go all the way back to the founding, it's actually not that new. So what is the original embedded story at Gusto?
One of the funny things is that when we started the company in the very, very early days, before we wrote a single line of code and we were just talking between one another, what should we start with? We identified this situation where, if you remember, back then, this is 2010, early 2010s, you had like TaskRabbit and you had Instacart and Uber just started and Airbnb, like all these companies that was sharing economy. And one of the things that was a need that was obvious is that, well, you got to go need to go and pay all these people. How do you do that in a programmatic way was one thing that we were or tinkering with when we were thinking about, you know, where to go, where to start from. So there was a few weeks, like just before we started YC, Y Combinator, where we actually thought our main idea is going to be API for payroll. And then we figured out that actually small business payroll is like the place to go. And I can share why.
Yeah, so embedded was an idea that you've had for a long time, but also thought was a very hard idea and not the right idea. So what has started to change now?
There's just so many services that focus on large kind of enterprises, and there's so many services that are focusing on consumers. But small business, that segment of the market, is really been underserved, at least by the tech and software industry, for many years. In retrospect, like Josh, Eddie, and I coming together, we thought about what are things in our lives we feel are broken? What problems do we feel like really need to be solved? And small business payroll was one of these things that when we started talking with small businesses, they were like just angry about. And I have a story about that, actually. I used to lock myself in a, not lock, close the door and go inside a room in our house and start calling small businesses, literally opening Yelp pages. Like today is going to be my, you know, spas in San Francisco day. So you call one spa at a time. The next day is like, today's going to be my whatever, cafes in San Francisco day. So you call one at a time. And the goal was just to get to repetition. A lot of small business, talk with a lot of potential customers and understand them and understand what they need. We figured out that we care about small businesses. We have small businesses in our background. And we wanted to figure out like what are some really big problems. And the thing that kept coming out is there's kind of two big problems for small businesses, right? It's like people-oriented stuff and money-oriented stuff. And the people-oriented stuff is where it felt like there was just so much anger. So here's an example. Two of the out of the first 30 customers I talk, or potential customers I talk with, two of them just voluntarily told me that their password to their payroll product, ABC, they were using ABC, I'm just using it as a name, ABC, their password to ABC, and I was crazy. I didn't ask people what's their passwords, and they just decided to tell me, and they were just upset and angry. So as a product person, the lesson learned for me from this is what you're looking for is the top 5% emotional response for whatever you're working on. It could be like the super, super angry and upset and disappointment, or super, super happy and like unbelievably excited, right? Then the 90% in the middle is just people being nice to you or people having no opinions. So you're looking for that kind of thing.
And what was that story about getting the direct product live, building it, going through YC? Give us some of the early story of Gusto.
Yes.
Then Zen Payroll.
The company started at Zen Payroll, Modern Delightful Payroll, and then we changed it to Gusto a couple of years later. Okay. When we started YC, we already knew, okay, small business, our goal was to build a small business payroll, but then quickly expand to benefits, HR, and other things. We knew it's all connected. When you talk with customers, it's pretty clear. Our idea was like, okay, we need to launch as soon as possible. And we obviously wanted to do it for the success of the company, but we also decided we're not going to pay ourselves until we have an actual payroll product to go and pay ourselves.
Payroll.
And then you start learning about payroll. How complicated can it be? Right? You just need to pay someone, get some taxes out, and that's it. That sounds really simple. Apparently, it's not. Just to give you a taste of it, and the U.S. has 50 different states. Every state has their own rules and regulations. Overall, there's tens of thousands of tax codes, because tax codes also come not just from state, but also locals. The locals can be as small as like a school district, and some school districts are really small, so they don't have an online system. And then you need to literally have somebody calling them up and telling them, hey, what's your tax rate again? Your new tax rate, because you haven't updated. So there's some states that are really bad this way. And then there's this weird thing of knowing even which taxes are applicable to you, because it's really important for anyone touching payroll and anyone touching compliance to understand these nuances. So I'll just give one last crazy example. You can live, there's some streets where you can live at the end of the street at a cul-de-sac, and depending on which side of the cul-de-sac you live, you have different taxes applicable to you if you work at the same company, right? And that's again because of some random school district laws and things like that. It is complicated. But when we started, we did not know any of this stuff. So what we did know is that, hey, let's start really small. Do a good job for that small audience and then expand it from there. So we started the simplest payroll product you can imagine. Just payroll for small businesses under 5 employees with no benefits, no hourly employees. You can pay in 7 days. Like, it's just a really tiny segment. And we said, you know what? If we do a really good job for that segment and our customers love this, then we can start expanding. And that's basically the route that we took.
Yeah. And you took that core product. There's enough pain. You were able to scale it to what you now have north of 300,000 direct customers.
Right.
but that's still less than 6% of the market. So you're looking at this huge market. So talk to me about where the embedded story starts to come back alive and why.
Exactly. So every year since, as I mentioned, it started with, should we start with the payroll API or should we start with direct payroll? We ended up starting with direct payroll. And then every year when we looked at our strategy, it was always like, is now time? No. Is now time? No. Is now time? No. And then ended up being 10 years later, okay, now is the time. And the reason is that the way this is, I think, is first, I think this is the future. For me, it's quite clear that for many small businesses, it makes tons of sense to, when you start, to just have, so if you're like, you're just out of dentistry school and you want to start your dental practice, you go to a vertical SaaS focusing on dentists. If you want to start like whatever, a bakery, vertical SaaS for bakeries, vertical SaaS for laundromats and so forth. It just makes so much sense to have everything you need in one place because it's less software, less integrations, less CSV uploads, less.
And there are a few successful, like Mindbody is one of the canonical examples. But in 2021 or 2020, right before you start, there aren't that many vertical SaaS. Fast forward to today, they're like 400 plus if you look around. So you're seeing the vertical SaaS wave.
You saw a successful point of sale system. Yeah. So you saw Square, for example, do a really good job in starting with just point of sale, then quickly expanding to one more thing. And they did that years ago, right? Yep. And you saw Toast do this, another point of sale. But it was clear, I think, from that, okay, that's cool for point of sale. That's one particular type of business, like retail, restaurants. First, they're not the only ones in the market. There's a bunch of others.
Yeah.
And then second, there's going to be all these other verticals, and we start seeing them pop up. If you believe this is the future, if you believe that you want to be a part of that future and the market starts changing.
You want a product that delights your customers and you understand this is what customers want and need.
Yeah, exactly. Again, like in the end of the day, you put your small business hat and you ask yourself, what is best for the customer? And you should never fight what's best for the customer if you're focusing on consumers or small businesses, because that's what most of the time ends up like winning. I didn't say enterprise, by the way, because I think in enterprise, that's not always the case. But in consumer and small business, I think that's more often.
Yeah. And so basically seeing that trend. So a lot of it was about vertical SaaS, but then you've launched the product, you've closed your first platform partners. Love to hear some stories of who those are and then also how you've come to understand the market for embedded payroll since.
So it was really interesting because 10 years in, you start and you're focusing on a totally different type of customer. Our partners are not they're not the same small business partners. They're not like the dentist shops and like the dentistry practices and bagel shops and so forth. They are software companies. Some are small startups, but some are really huge. I think that's one thing, huge thing that we had to learn. Like, how do you sell that? Like, how do you build an API product? We had some API for our integration, so we used that, but it was, again, it's a new type of product for a new type of customer. So we did like this, we built this 0-to-1 team here in the company. Now, here's the nice thing that we had in that moment, which is we were not starting from scratch. We started from like these 10 years of infrastructure that's built both in terms of payments and credit and risk and all the compliance and taxes stuff that I talked about. We also have all these experience of go to market. We know how to sell this thing. We know how to serve this thing, all the operations that happen behind the scenes.
You have a battle-tested regulatory rules engine that's operating with live customers in all 50 states.
And we had those people who call up, again, those little state agencies. So we had the whole thing, all the infrastructure ready. So it was an interesting sweet spot because if the moment was 10 years later, that would probably be a terrible approach because then our tech stack would have been too old to build on top of. If it was 5 years earlier, then probably that would not have been an advantage because it wasn't battle tested enough. So it was this really nice, that's where we started with this 0-to-1 team that has the 2,000 people plus 10 years of experience baked into that API and then making that available to partners.
Yeah. And how did you decide who would be your first partners, your first customers? What do they look like? It would be great to hear some stories of those platforms, give people a sense of who they are, who their end customers and businesses using the embedded product are.
Yeah, totally. So there's a bunch of them. I mentioned earlier that kind of the calling up 30 and then 100 small businesses one by one back like 13 years ago when we started the company. We did a similar thing here before we started with Gusto Embedded of basically calling up all the companies we think would really enjoy and should have embedded payroll. And that was a really interesting exercise because then you learn about, you know, what they care about and you start doing segmentation. So one customer that I feel just to jump to is a company called Collective. It's a really cool partner. they do all-in-one, business in a box for S-corps, like the whole kind of thing end-to-end. So all the compliance and accounting and back office and you know, the finances, and then also
payroll. S-corps usually being very small, one, two, couple of employees.
Exactly. And it's interesting because most of their, so a couple of things to think. One is that they all need to do payroll. By law, if you're an S-corp, you got to do that payroll. And then two is that most of them is just one person payroll. And if you think about it, one person payroll is very different than just payroll, right? Because you're paying yourself, basically, yeah. And you want to have your paycheck. The whole work of running payroll and approving hours and the workflow and deductions and all that stuff, you don't need this. It's just yourself.
Yeah.
And you can pay yourself however often you want. So they built a really, really cool product that just focuses entirely on that segment and does a really good job in it. And the sort of partner you want to work with are people who, on one side, they have a use case you believe in, but then on the other side, you believe in their technical capabilities, you believe in them as a team, you believe they can go and get that to happen, because the very first customers that they're taking a bet on you, right? They're taking a risk of working with you, but I would still say that they're taking a bet on you and you need to be there for them and really help them build the right product, get a lot of feedback, quickly iterate and work with them. So you really want these innovative players to start. Another couple of different ones, we work with Clean Cloud and also Sense. These are two really cool vertical SaaS companies that actually focused on laundromats. And laundromats is a big business in the US. There's like tens of thousands of these businesses, and they built like this all-in-one vertical SaaS for laundromats. And you would say, like, why is payroll for laundromats a big deal? The way they calculate payroll and they pay people is by the pound. So it's by the pound of like how much laundry they've processed and folded and things like that. So it's pretty cool to have that built in when you open your laundromat, Rex.
And I assume you did not have that already in your product. So that was something you had to build new.
So that's the sort of stuff you can build with an API, right? Yeah. So you'll say, okay, we're going to use all of Gusto's like backend compliance, payments and all of that, filings, all that stuff. But we're going to build a flow that's just specifically yep. great for laundromats, right? And, you know, we have same thing with Archie for dentists, like where you charge for this, the sort of things you do and with the patient. These are the sort of customers.
Yeah. So you have 300,000 direct customers. There are tens of millions of small businesses. The future for small businesses, for a lot of them, is business in a box. To get into that, you need to be the inside of those platforms. But there are also other opportunities, too. I think we talked about how there's some other categories, like HRIS. Right. So you're not just doing small businesses. You're also starting to support businesses that maybe have hundreds or even thousands of employees. But again, it's about addressing the larger market.
Exactly. So when we started, the big switch was vertical SaaS. We thought, like, this is going to be the thing. This is great for customers and all that stuff. When we actually got it to the market and started calling people up, we understood that there's actually multiple verticals there that are interested in this. And some of them are actually bigger than what we thought. So banks was a really big one. HRIS, as you mentioned, so enabling really large kind of HR platforms to have a payroll solution kind of built in with them. Time tracking solutions is another one where you already track time. Like running payroll is like a print button of time tracking, basically. Point of sale, accounting technology, for example, like FreshBooks and companies like that. That's you're already doing your accounting, you're already doing your financial back office. It makes sense to do payroll there too. Yeah, so over time we learned more and more of these, and some of them surprised us of like when they were ready. Some were like ahead of their time, and some of them were later than we thought.
So, and this is why I'm so excited about fintech, is like even for someone like Gusto, you're like, oh, we do payroll. We've known it for 10 years. Like, surely we know payroll. And then look into the market, you're like, oh, there's still so much, but we still have such a small piece of it, and there's so much more to build.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like we only have 6% market share, more or less, of businesses in the U.S. There's 94% more to go. And when I think about that, like many of them are going to be served by these other embedded players.
Yeah. And I think another interesting thread to pull on, there are a whole bunch here with the embedded play by you guys, but one is, how do you go from 0 to 1 on a new product? Two is, when you have that new product, when do you decide to actually go after a big enterprise client? And so I think this would be a great segue to talk about, like, why JPM? How did that happen? Did you try it too early, too late? How do you know when is the right time to go after a whale who has 6 million small businesses?
So that's a huge lesson I think I learned from this. So JP Morgan Payments and like that team, we're really excited for the work with them. We have another top five bank. So we have two of the top five banks in the US now.
I think arguably it's like the biggest ever embedded fintech deal. You've got to execute, you got to ship it, you got to push it out to their customers, right. But it has a lot of potential.
Yeah. Here's what I thought is you go to one of the biggest companies in the whole world. That doesn't sound like they're going to be very fast moving. That doesn't sound like it's going to be a place to start if you want to do 0 to 1 and iterate and move quickly, right? And actually, I was really surprised. I was blown away by that team. They're just really acted like a startup. Yeah. And so the lesson learned for me is that you can have really big companies that are moving really fast if that team that you're working with is they're thinking like a startup and they see themselves as innovators. And on the other side, you can have smaller companies that go really slow because they're not sure about their strategy and they're like going up back and forth. So yeah, for us to start,
you're live with some JP Morgan customers. I'm sure you have some very small, presumably nimble startups who you haven't launched with because they've just been dragging their feet for a year or more.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that totally happens. We had situations where, you know, you work with a team and you get really excited and then they had a CEO change. So that takes a couple of months. Yeah. And then you're like, you're there and then you get another CEO change. Yeah. And then so that also happens even in small companies. Then on the other side, you have like really large companies that are just committed and they're on it and they're freaking like pushing.
And they're pushing you. But yeah, so on the JPM side, it sounds like one of the big things is just team alignment, having a good team and sponsor.
It's like you need to feel inspired and excited to have them. Almost, would you hire them? Would you want them to be a part of your team? Are they that kind of bar for innovation, for like building both the technical side and then finally, like again, the strategy side? Are they committed?
Yeah,
and that's a really big part of it.
Yeah, and then in terms of actually getting that deal live, because there are a lot of companies out there in financial services and fintech land who like want to land an enterprise client, but they're like, man, it's going to take a long time. Like, how do you actually get them across the line?
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of things. I feel like the problem with selling to these really big companies, and I have this from my previous startup experience that back in Israel, this is like 15 years ago, that failed because I took a long time to sell the product, so long, in fact, that the company died because it ran out of money. Lesson learned. But the thing with selling to these big enterprises, the problem is that they can take a lot of your time without being committed. So you need to really get that commitment earlier on and feel out like, hey, are they serious about this? So talking about timelines, talking about who's the decision maker. So you got to pitch, but while you pitch or like at the same meeting, that's an example of like kind of the first conversation. You also need to figure out like, is there a commitment? Are they real? Are they serious about it? And as a founder, you just want to sell the time. You want to get people excited. You want to pitch. But with enterprises specifically, because the process is so long, you need to have that pull too for this to be successful. If you're feeling like you're pushing a rope, that just move to the next customer, potentially keep them warm.
Yeah. And what does the future of like go-to-market look and feel like? So obviously you got JP Morgan, big opportunity, a lot more work there to get more clients live. But where are you spending your time now in terms of trying to orient the embedded platform?
Yeah. So there's all these different markets. Again, like HRS is a really big one. We're really excited about that because all of these HR products for large companies now figured out like, hey, HR without payroll is you have a missing wheel for your car. And then again, banks is going to be a really big one. I think what happens too in terms of a dynamic is that often you have the leader in a field, and then when that leader flips and
it's such a great dynamic because you push against that rope, you like try and roll the rock up the hill, and then one day your phone starts ringing after you go live.
Yeah,
the first.
It's like poof, everything changes. So that's really. That's also like you having that marquee customer. But I would just say, if you're out there trying to figure out your first few customers in these sort of products, follow the innovators. Figure out who are the people who innovate, who are the people who have big dreams, who have like budgets behind it and want to go out there and differentiate. And then they can help you flip the other people.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I also want to use the story of Embedded to talk just a little bit about company building and experimentation in general. This is not the first 0 to 1 product you've done. So what is your framework for building 0 to 1 products internally? And what are some other ones you've tried that maybe have or have not worked in the past?
Yeah. Okay. So 0 to 1 is really fun, obviously. And in a big company, it's even double fun because you're not running out of money if it doesn't succeed.
But that could be a trap as well. They're not running out of money. Like you don't have this existential pressure in the same way that you do in a startup.
Totally. Yeah. It's a different game. And there's a reason why it's very hard for big companies to innovate too. So the structure for what you need for a successful 0 to 1 is different going to be for what the way the mothership is running. That we're doing still today, and that's cool. I think that's a cool methodology, is around setting like milestones that are very much based on the venture model in terms of like when you unlock additional budgets. So let's say there's a team with an idea, cool, you give them like the seed round, which basically means, okay, two people start building it and see what happens. And then you agree ahead of time, say, okay, for you to get to the Series A milestone, you need to show these sort of metrics. And those metrics depends on the situation. Could be like number of people using the product, could be AR or something like that. And then once you get to that point, you give a timeline for it. And then once you get to that point, you can go and unlock additional funding. And what we found was like really creating a lot of clarity for these teams around, okay, I know what's the next phase. I know what I need to do. I don't need to participate in the big mothership process of funding and quarterly and biannual funding cycles and all that stuff. I have my own thing. And the fastest I get to the first million in ARR, boom, I get unlocked more budget. And then I get three more
conversely, people. If I don't, it gets shut down.
Exactly. Yeah. Then there's a conversation. Because I think in startups, there is a way of building something where it's like, it's an experiment and we're trying it. And if not, we're going to shut it down. But there's other ways of building it where you're like, I have such a hard conviction, such a strong conviction that this is going to be the future.
Yeah.
That if we didn't get it right, maybe we're not doing it correctly. So we need to change the way we're doing it.
Yeah.
Or timing, maybe our timing is incorrect, but we're going to still invest in it. The conversation is a tough conversation. It doesn't have to be kill the product. It could be just change the way we do it.
Yeah.
Which is also going to be tough.
One of the interesting things about FinTech or financial services is it inevitably, any product starts to touch other products. Right. Payroll starts to touch benefits, starts,
right.
And then you have to also adjudicate as to which ones you want to prioritize.
Yeah, totally. And the thing with payroll is that you start with payroll. The moment you start touching it, people start asking you about the next thing, which is contracts or payments, or is it time tracking, or is it benefits to move from one thing to another. And I think that, the embedded space is going to have a lot of that. For sure. So you need to really make sure that as the embedded player, I remember talking with an embedded founder a couple of years ago in our space, and I was shocked when they told me, oh yeah, my customer is the developer, the API. I don't care about the end customer. They're not my customer. They're the partner's customer. And I think that's totally backwards because guess what? Like success means that these people, the end customers, do really well. So you have to bring in that knowledge and bring that to the game and help build an end product that people really love.
Yeah, no, that's super important. And building the systems to translate feedback through your partner is also incredibly important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I wonder like how much kind of Gusto embedded players are there going to be where like people with like 10 years in, like a successful brand goes and build their own embedded play versus like brand new startups going on from scratch. One of the things that make it hard is that you and I talked about earlier that so much of what fintech has become is kind of compliance. So it's not just moving the money, it's also like the rules engine. And that rules engine sounds like, oh, it's just a piece of software, and it ends up being much more complicated than that. A lot of operational
work. It's not like you build it, you ship it, because rules change over time.
We got hundreds and actually thousands of regulators out there at this moment right now writing new rules and regulations about taxes.
God bless them.
Exactly. They're all working for the people, but you know, it's a lot of work.
So I think you're 3 years into the embedded product, 1 year into your announcement of your deal with JP Morgan. What does the next 1, 3, 5, 10 years look like for Gusto, but also for the new platform?
Yeah, so I think honestly, look, both businesses are doing really well. Both businesses are growing really well. I think we don't know yet how much of the whole like 100% of like payroll market is going to be embedded versus not. We're going to learn that as we go. The same thing is that we learned that there's verticals that have more pull than others.
We talked about this earlier, where if you look at the vertical SaaS companies of the 400 of the list someone published recently, 10 of them, 20 of them are north of Series A. So it's just getting started on just, and that's one of your kind of five focus areas.
Exactly. So yeah, some things take more time than you might imagine. So I think for Gusto, the future is on the Gusto Direct side. We're going to keep building this business. We have a lot of really cool new functionalities that we're releasing. It's basically a lot of that kind of idea around small businesses are already using our product. They already rely on us. They trust us with their compliance. They trust us with their payments. So they also want to buy other things from us, right? So there's additional apps that we go and we build for these customers. There's a bunch of compliance requirements, for example, around learning and development. There's classes that you need to take when you get to a specific size that you just have to do sexual harassment training and things like that. People to use Gusto expect us to go and help them with that. So we do. But these are the sort of things that we're going to keep expanding into. There's going to be a lot. So today we have around like 10, like what we call apps, like a payroll and benefits. Like each one of them is an app. I expect in a couple of years, we're going to probably be 20 and then 30 apps. On the Gusto Embedded side, I think the work is to keep building like the best absolutely embedded product out there in the market, make it really easy to integrate, make it really easy and self-serve for the smaller startup and larger companies to go and leverage us, whether you are an HRIS provider or a time tracking or a bank and so forth. And then over time, also take more and more pieces of Gusto and make them embedded. The name of the team, actually, and like some folks here with the t-shirts, is Gusto Embedded. It's not Gusto Embedded Payroll. And it's because we're starting with payroll, but we're expanding. Each one of the apps is also going to be embedded in the future.
Yeah. And the apps that make sense in the direct context may make no sense or more sense in an embedded context.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Exactly.
I want to move on to some general company building things as well, too, just around things that are happening right now and the moment we're in. So the biggest one, of course, is AI. We'd love to hear hype versus reality and where you're seeing that sort of tooling have the most impact at Gusto.
Yeah, AI is making an incredible impact. I think we're going to keep seeing more and more and more of it. I think, so there's two sides of it. There's like the internal and the external customer facing. I think the easiest one to start iterating on is internal facing, because internally we have all these very forgiving customers, which is our Gusties, and we all try to improve our workflow. We're seeing this incredible amount of actually improved quality and efficiency on our customer care side, on the sales side. There's just like incredible amount of work being done there. It's interesting to talk about what should you buy externally and what should you experiment with internally. Yeah. I feel like for us, sometimes we are actually A/B testing it. We're having like on one side building our own and the other side using a vendor and trying to figure out which one is more successful. So far, it's unclear whether actually the vendors are more successful, in spite of there's reasons why they should sometimes. When you understand your data, when you understand your use case, you can really rebuild something that's custom and very helpful to your team. So that's the internal side. On the external side, there's a bunch of stuff that we launched, whether it's like helping people automatically write job descriptions and job posts and things like that, whether it's we announced Gus, which is the name of our Gusto Assistant, which you can speak with, and Gus will help you answer all these different compliance questions, as well as help you actually do stuff in Gusto. And this is just the beginning. Again, it's just starting. We have this huge roadmap ahead, and I'm really excited about this. I think it's going to make a big difference for our small businesses, and they need the help. Yeah. Imagine how cool it is where, as a small business, you'll have an expert in all the legal requirements around running your business, so you don't need to pay like a crazy amount of money for lawyers and be kind of in stress. Am I okay with the IRS? Am I okay with, is someone going to sue me? All of that can be accessible to you, and it's not a dream. It's happening right now, so I'm very excited about it.
Yeah. One thing I think is great about Gusto and related to the SOX story is just great, strong culture. Curious how remote versus in-person work fits into Gusto and Gusto's culture.
Yeah, we try to do the best. So we have a hybrid situation. So some days in the office, some days are not in the office. We try to make the most out of remote. We try to make it successful. But bringing in a lot of the coordination that used to be in person, in documents, and you use Asana and things like that, and to have much more documentation and things like that helps. I would say on the cultural side, we try to bring people together. So one of the things that we do that I think is really cool, actually, and really helpful is that we get...
Your number one bit of advice for founders who are building today in fintech, thinking about starting something, it sounds like early on for you. One, just listening to customer problems. And then being a little naive as to the depth of the complexity of the payroll system.
Yeah, okay. Number one advice. I think my number one advice is it has to build your intuition. So how do you build intuition? By spending a lot of time with customers, because guess what? You are going to make 1,000 decisions in those first, call it 6 months of your company. And those decisions are going to carry a lot of weight later, because these are the early kind of formation decisions. So they should be informed by something. The problem is that you don't have enough data, because you don't have enough customers. Yeah. You don't have research. And even like at a huge size of a company, it's that you can't just rely on data. Intuition is really helpful. But the way you don't just intuitively ruin your company and build a great product is by spending a lot of time with these small businesses, talking with them, learning about their days. What did you do this morning? How did you get to work? It's like literally the kind of the day-to-day moment to understand them and then go and build for them. I still today give my phone number very freely to customers. If I meet a customer in the street, hey, someone sees me with my Gusto t-shirt, which I often wear in order to get those kind of moments with customers. They can share something. They share something. Oh, my love the payday email. It made me happy or whatever that is. It's like, awesome. Yeah, thanks for the story. I ask them about themselves. And then I give them my phone number. Say, hey, if you have any issue, just call me. And it's nice because you get these anecdotal evidence as you go all the time. So that's the direct communication with customers. There's nothing like it. So that would be my biggest thing. The second thing is make sure to tell your, whether it's a partner, your partner, your family partner, or your mom, or your brother or sister, like people who are around you, your loved one, make sure you tell them what's going to happen next and how hard you're going to work and why you're working so hard. So they get excited, they get behind it, because you're going to need support, because starting a company is a lot. It takes a lot. Come on, everybody.
Awesome. That's a wrap for us. I think we are going to take some questions from the audience if you're game for that. I know you guys have good questions. And the first one we'll go with is up here in the front.
Hi. What's the best use case you see right now for the Gusto Embedded product, or like the one you're most excited about?
Best use case? So again, I go back to these verticals that I mentioned. It's hard to pick. It's picking your children.
That's the way I'm asking. What's the go-to for you guys?
I can't pick between my children.
Maybe don't pick between your children, but pick like it's an exciting learning for one of your customers you had recently.
Yeah.
I think that would be another way of, then you don't have to say it's just a recent story.
Yeah. So this is a company that comes to mind. I'm really excited about what Lattice is doing in HRIS. I think that, you know, for the longest time, mid-market kind of companies called like 200, 500 and above got really shitty software to run their companies. And if you ever worked in these companies and had to interact with these internal systems, you wanted to pull your hair. And I think companies like Lattice, and there's others in the space as well that we're partnering with, are building great user experiences for employees and for admins. And they're really building like the sort of user experiences that we use in consumer. To payroll is a part of it because it's all connected, right? If you're putting your people there and you put your time tracking there, payroll is like the print button for these things.
Other questions?
Thanks for all the great insight. How should vertical SaaS founders think about choosing between different embedded payroll partners or other embedded fintech partners? What are the criteria that they should be using?
If you're doing payroll, what I would say is Gusto Embedded is the best option. Here's why, okay? With Gusto Embedded, we have this idea of on one side, and now I'll generalize it. This is not my pitch for everybody to use Gusto Embedded, so I'll generalize. I think the thing is, when you use any sort of embedded software, you want on one side the ability to build quickly. You want to go to market. If you're a startup, you don't have time. You don't want to have 3 years of implementation or a whole year of implementation. You want to get out the market as fast as you can with a really good product. The really good product part, that's the second thing you need to think about. So how do you build a product that's not just you just check the box and you launched it, but rather something that's really good? And the truth is that in the world of payroll as well as payments, there's good alternatives out there, right? So you have to have the bar for the business is already quite high. So you have to go in and go above that. The way we think about ourselves and why like Gusto is the right place, we build a great set of APIs, great set of embedded components and workflows, so you don't have to build everything from scratch. You can come in and pick and choose and start go to market quickly. But on the other side, the good product part in payroll, a lot of it is compliance. You need to know that it works. Because guess what? If it doesn't work, if there's a payroll mistake, if there's a tax mistake, what ends up happening is this customer is going to be really pissed, and it's going to be pissed on you. We're going to be upset with you and your company. Here's another thing that's interesting here. You should actually take some time to learn about the industry that you're adding, because you're with embedded, often you're adding not just, it's not like I'm embedding Twilio or Stripe, like it's a little transaction. You're actually building a whole product. You're embedding that product, building it, making it your own. So you need to understand enough and what it means. And usually what it could mean is that it's not just about the user experience that you're seeing. It's also the things that's happening behind the scenes. In payroll, for example, when you make a mistake, you're not going to believe this, okay? If you can make a mistake calculating payroll, and it's going to take a year and a half for the business to know, for anybody to know that you made a mistake, a year and a half. And the reason is, let's say you made that mistake, you didn't do the taxes correctly, the filing only happens in the end of the year for that particular tax. For that agency, it takes time for them to process the whole thing. Then a year and a half later, you get that notice, oh, you miscalculated that paycheck. And guess what? Then you need to go back to the employees that it touched, call them because they may no longer be in your company. They move to the next company and try to fix their paycheck and fix their W-2s and all that kind of stuff. A lot of time with these embedded solution, and that's for me the difference between embedded and like just like APIs, is that it's this iceberg where there's the thing around the water, above the water, which is the user experience and the API. But in the things that under the water, you really need to understand it and make sure that you pick the right partner there.
Thanks. Thank you.
I think last question, if we have any more. Ian.
Hey, Tomer. Thanks for the time today. You had mentioned earlier about the importance of delightful experiences and how that was a North Star for you all. As you're describing, payroll is incredibly complex. Delightful experiences and complexity are at odds. How do you think about creating delightful experiences for complex products and processes?
Yeah, so I think generally what makes a good product, in my opinion, like what makes a good user experience is like there's kind of three things. The first one is it does the job end to end. What does it mean end to end? It means that you don't just do the thing that's in payroll, for example. You don't just move the money and you're done. You need to think about all the other things that happen later, again, with the taxes and all that stuff. So that's the functional thing. That's the first thing, functional. That's the job. The second thing is intuitive. Intuitive means that when somebody sees it, you just see the picture, you know what to do. You don't need to read help center articles. You don't need to go and read tooltips and stuff like that, right? It's just intuitive. And the third thing is delightful. And delightful, without the other two, it doesn't matter. Because if it doesn't do the job end to end, you know, doesn't matter. You got to do the job end to end and you got to do the intuitive. Then it's the delightful. Okay, so what is delightful? Delightful is when you surprise somebody, is when you build someone something in a way and you build an interaction in a way that they didn't anticipate. For us, for example, in the very early days, we did this thing where, you know, when the employees got paid, we noticed that moment of getting paid is a huge celebration. It's a nice moment. So you kind of leave the world of taxes and compliance and all that stuff that I talked about earlier, and instead of that, you think about the human experience of you just got paid. It could be your first salary ever. It could be money that you're going to go use and buy something cool for your daughter. It could be whatever it is in your life that you really care about. So we took that moment and we tried to really amplify it. Okay, it's a good moment. How do you do that? So we had a bunch of user experiences. One of them is this really delightful email that people now know a lot about. It became famous over time, but it's noticing the moment where hooray, you got paid. Here's like a bunch of really cool stats and like funny things and about this moment of celebration and taking it to the next level. So I think the pitfall number one is over focus on delightful without focusing on the other two. And then the second thing to think about, if you want to identify these moments, you think about the emotional journey of the user every single step and where there's moments of ups you can amplify and where there's moments of down you can help with.
Adam Nash gave a talk a while ago, and he said one way to implement that, too, is like literally on your product roadmap or on your weekly sprint cycle. You're like, look, we allocate this much to metric movers, this much end-to-end experience, and we're going to have this many points literally allocated to delightful, which probably won't move a metric we can see, but if you never prioritize it, so it literally has to fit into the product development cycle, too.
We're using this framework, this 1-2-3 that I mentioned in design critiques. When a user experience comes out, like when you see something that's like almost done, not completely done, everybody knows that's the question we're going to have in our head when we review is, okay, is it end-to-end? Is it intuitive? And then finally, did you find moments of delight to amplify?
Yeah, so like literally implement it every time you get a new release, new feature,
exactly.
New pull request. That's awesome. Thanks so much, everyone, for coming out.